Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 4th, 2020. Two COVID-19 patients recover from the disease in South Sudan, and Kenyan authorities are offering voluntary testing for COVID-19. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Two COVID-19 patients have recovered from the disease in South Sudan. The Undersecretary of South Sudan's Ministry of Health says one of the patients was released from an isolation center in Juba and the other was released from a facility in Torit. The South Sudan government says it has new strategies to control the spread of the coronavirus following a recent surge in confirmed cases. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Over the past week in South Sudan, the number of COVID-19 cases rose from 6 to 49. First Vice President Riek Machar says the COVID-19 task force is redoubling its efforts to contain the spread of the disease.
We have decided to divide Juba into 5 zones. There will be testing of 100 samples in each zone. This is a sampling so that the task force is able to know if there are people who are affected, say, in Monoki, Kator, inside Juba, among other places, so that we are able to know the spread of this disease, especially inside Juba.
South Sudan has also ordered more ventilators. Minister of Health Elizabeth Achue-Yoro says the country has 4 ventilators. Makur Matur Koryoma, the undersecretary in South Sudan's health ministry, says another 6 ventilators are due to arrive in the country this week. Matur, who is also a member of the COVID-19 task force, says isolation centers are being established in all 10 states and some selected counties.
These facilities will be equipped with intensive care units. At Juba level, at least to a capacity of 20 care beds, plus other beds that are used for isolation. And in the states, we'll have at least 5, in each hospital, 5 intensive care beds for all the equipment tested, and other beds used for isolation of patients with infectious disease.
Recent reports say the U.S. government and various international organizations have donated millions of dollars to support the fight against the coronavirus in South Sudan and other African countries. Matur says that the COVID-19 task force has received no money from donors.
The millions and millions that you people hear for coming from donors doesn't come to the government, not even a single penny. They just put it in the media, but they disperse it to organizations, NGOs. And government doesn't have any say on the way they spend it. They don't even report to the government.
Matur says earlier the government pledged to give the task force $5.4 million as a 6-month operating budget to manage the pandemic. Matur says the task force has so far received $3 million. Activist Wani Michael, who runs the OK Africa Foundation, welcomes stepped-up efforts by the task force to control the spread of the virus, but says he is surprised that many South Sudanese still go to crowded markets and attend funerals despite government directives to practice social distancing. Michael also says it's shameful to see senior government officials, including ministers, violating the directives.
The only bridge that we have in Juba, during the official opening, I mean the reopening after repair, we saw the Minister of Roads and Bridges and other government officials mobilizing huge, very huge crowd. That's why even some of us are questioning, why are they sentencing Abraham Chol when we know for a fact that there are people, even ministers, who violated the presidential order of social distancing. We know there are people who defected all to the SPLM as a party. But then we saw them conducting press conference and not even adherings to the presidential order of social distancing.
Michael says there should be a total lockdown in Juba with certain exceptions, such as those for people who may deliver food and water to residents provided by the government. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The UN Refugee Agency says there is a potential devastating impact of COVID-19 on internal displaced persons and refugees in South Sudan, many of whom live in crowded camps with poor sanitation. A UNHCR spokesperson in South Sudan says his agency is working with the government to make sure IDPs are included in the country's COVID-19 response plan. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
UNHCR says coronavirus preparedness efforts must be strengthened in South Sudan in order to prevent a possible humanitarian crisis with refugees and IDPs. Guilia Rafaeli, UNHCR's communication officer in South Sudan, says ongoing intercommunal clashes combined with coronavirus restrictions on movement and goods are creating significant challenges for humanitarian organizations that provide much-needed aid to affected populations.
This complicates further the situation of those already particularly vulnerable who now need to face also the COVID-19 threat. Another element is linked to the health facilities in the country. We know that most of them were damaged or destroyed during the conflict, and those remaining often require support with medicine, qualified health professionals, and medical equipment.
And Rafaeli says fighting in certain parts of the country has left many people struggling to survive.
UNHCR and its partners are on the ground, and we are aware that several thousand people have been reported recently to be displaced. And we have been conducting an assessment on the situation. The focus for us has been in identifying persons with specific needs among the displaced, as many are women, children, and elderly.
Rafaeli says thousands of people were uprooted from their homes earlier by intercommunal fights or renewed clashes between South Sudan's warring parties. She says forcing them to stay in crowded camps could expose them to more risk of contracting the virus.
The ongoing intercommunal violence and clashes are a threat to this space of intervention and are displacing people and damaging the available infrastructures. This means increasing people's vulnerability to the virus.
The French group Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, say the number of people sheltering in Yé County who were displaced recently in Lenya County of Central Equatorial State has risen from 3,000 to 7,000 and calls their situation dire. Sarah Hore is the head of MSF's medical team in Yé.
On the 23rd of April, 1,200 people arrived, and now there are 7,000 people registered with the authorities as displaced in the locality. Some people have said there are more people who have not managed to reach Yé. Some, as I said, are severely injured, and some have not been seen since the violence. But we're not sure how many more people there could be.
Most of those displaced were forced out of their homes in the Mukaya area of Yé in central Equatorial State. Horace says some of the displaced who were injured in the fighting are being treated at several MSF facilities in Yé.
We've seen evidence of restraint use on wrists and legs and other wounds.
South Sudan has 1.7 million internal displaced persons, as well as nearly 300,000 refugees who fled to the country from neighboring countries including Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Ethiopia. Around 260,000 South Sudanese have returned voluntarily to South Sudan in the last few months after seeking safety in neighboring countries, especially Uganda. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Some South Sudanese say the future of their jobs in the private sector is uncertain as restrictions put in place to stop the spread of the COVID-19 has devastated the economy. Some workers say the weekend Labor Day meant nothing since they lost their jobs after the government asked all non-essential businesses to close down. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
27-year-old Mary Tabu says she was working at the motor spare parts shop as a sales officer. Tabu says she lost her job more than a month ago when the business closed its doors due to COVID-19.
Since the coronavirus have started, they all stopped at us from work. And since then, they have stopped us. Life is very, very difficult for us to go with. Since from that moment, as me as a lady, I've been working for myself, paying my school fees, hustling for my own life. But since they've stopped work, things become very hard and difficult. Even to eat is a problem.
In mid-March, South Sudan's high-level task force for COVID-19 announced the closure of all non-essential businesses to control the spread of coronavirus. Tabo says she was earning 33,000 South Sudanese pounds a month, which is equivalent to $100 from her work. She says that is all gone now, making Labor Day celebrations meaningless.
The day of Labor Day is not really so enjoyable due to coronavirus. Life is very hard, transport is hard, even there's nowhere to go since they've stopped us from work. My boss has nothing to say about it. So the only thing he said was like, we should wait until the coronavirus stopped or until the government has to say we are supposed to open our shop.
While she waits for things to get better, Tabu says she will continue staying at home and worrying about finding something to eat. 33-year-old Mabutu Ayuen says he has been working as a sales broker for a bus company plying the Juba-Kampala highway. He says he used to earn enough money to provide for the daily needs of his wife and three children until authorities banned cross-border travel. Speaking in Dinka, Ayuen says this Labor Day his family is going hungry.
This is where I feed my family, and I am going for nearly a month now without making money to feed my family. So celebration for this day is fake. We don't have work. I feel happy and celebrate when I have something to eat.
Ayuen says he worries his family will starve if things remain the way they are now for much longer. Matthew Sulelado, director for the Central Equatoria State Labor Union, says more than 8,000 workers in both the public and private sectors have been impacted by the coronavirus restrictions. Speaking in Arabic, Lado urged the government to provide food to workers who have lost their jobs.
Our workers are suffering. We are expecting to celebrate the benefit from their hard work. But unfortunately, this virus came in. So we in the state, we feel a lot of pain as a result of this disease, as there is no work for both working in the private sector and public sector.
Lado is encouraging laid-off South Sudanese workers to try to stay calm and follow all government protective measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials are concerned about human rights. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way, but hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I need and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The director of the African Centers for Disease Control said that human rights must be at the center of African countries' COVID-19 response. Dr. John Getsong made the remarks after reports of violent crackdowns by authorities in some African countries to enforce lockdown measures aimed at halting the spread of the outbreak. VOA's Jason Patenkin reports from Washington.
The head of the African Centers for Disease Control calls on African governments to respect human rights and dignity while enforcing coronavirus lockdown measures. Dr. John Nkengasong said lockdowns cannot be enforced with violence.
This has to be done with human rights and dignity at the center of this. I think we strongly condemn and discourage use of force or excessive force in trying to implement the lockdown process. Security apparatus has to treat people with dignity. They must engage the community.
In Kangasong's remarks made Tuesday during an online panel organized by the Atlantic Council think tank in Washington, follow reports from numerous countries of police violently cracking down on citizens to enforce COVID-19 curfews. In Kenya, South Africa, and elsewhere, police are alleged to have killed people while trying to enforce lockdowns. Africa's top doctor said officials must accept that strict lockdowns are not sustainable in Africa's refugee camps and urban slums.
There's absolutely no way you go to those communities today and you tell them that 10 people cannot sleep in a room. I think we have to admit that we have to contextualize our social distancing. We are beginning to see that it's a challenge. Even the lockdowns are a serious challenge for the countries. So many countries in Africa are already beginning to witness situations where the community and population are saying, look, we cannot live under these conditions any further.
And Nkengasong admitted that there is no solution yet for how to implement social distancing in crowded places. But he stressed the key to finding a way out is for governments to work with communities, not against them.
No one has the answer yet, but we have to frame it in the context of local ownership and local leadership of those responses. You really have to engage your community. This is not like turning on electricity in your home and turning it off. This has to be a community-led and a community-owned response, which we tailor the messages to the community, create community champions and leaders that will guide us into the basic understanding of how to fight this in the community there. It cannot be only public health led. I mean, public health alone will fail in those communities. There has to be a strong sociological components associated with public health practice to succeed in those communities.
He also urged African leaders to communicate effectively with citizens struggling during the COVID-19 outbreak.
Have a dialogue with the communities, educate them, inform them, and do that on a regular basis there. I was very pleased just the other day when the president of South Africa addressed the nation and was appealing for more patience from the community to cooperate more so that they can actually get the job done. I think you need regular engagement there. It has to be a process, not an event. It's not enough to just make a one-time TV announcement from the head of state or the leader.
As of Wednesday, African countries had over 34,000 confirmed cases and more than 1,500 deaths from COVID-19. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington.
Kenya is offering voluntary free testing for the coronavirus in the country's densely populated risk areas. But the Ministry of Health say there has been a low turnout. The testing, which kicks off Friday and continues this week, has so far recorded more than 50 positive cases, putting total confirmed infections in Kenya at over 400. researchers throughout the world are searching for remedies to treat COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. There are some drugs that show promise. However, fears among the public can lead to searches for unproven therapies. VOA's Carlo Pearson has more.
A drug called chloroquine, and some people would add to it hydroxychloroquine.
In mid-March, President Trump touted drugs used to treat malaria as a remedy for COVID-19.
Based on what I see, it could be a game changer.
And even though there was no proof that it worked for patients stricken by the virus, the president continued to promote the drugs.
I've seen people that are going to die without it. And you know the expression, when that's happening, they should do it. What really do we have to lose?
Michael Liu is a researcher at Oxford University. He says improper use of these powerful drugs can be hazardous.
They can be potentially cardiotoxic at very high doses. And for people with pre-existing conditions, there are additional risks that come along with these two drugs. And so they should be taken under medical supervision.
A new study published in JAMA, Internal Medicine, found that internet searches by people who wanted to buy these drugs jumped by nearly 1,400% after President Trump recommended them. Liu was the lead author.
Instead of just looking at search trends that were indicative of people just Googling and kind of learning more about these drugs, we specifically looked at people seeking out to buy or order these drugs in addition to kind of using these terms in addition to these e-commerce websites.
Disinfectants are hard to find in the stores, but calls to the CDC, poison control centers, and state departments of health increased after Mr. Trump said that injecting disinfectants might also work to treat COVID-19. Both manufacturers and doctors, like Dr. Oxiris Barbeau, the New York City Health Commissioner, warned the public not to try it.
Introducing one of these products in any way, shape, or form, be it by injection, ingestion, or application on the skin, is harming the body.
What the study suggests is that statements from political leaders influence people's actions, and misinformation can have harmful or even deadly results. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Cameroon's military says it killed at least 22 separatist fighters in a week of raids on 7 rebel camps in the troubled western regions. Villagers, however, say the military killed at least 13 civilians in the raids, which involve at least 300 troops. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
The commander in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest region said more than 300 troops were involved in successful raids this past week on rebel Amazonian camps. General Valerie Carr spoke via a messaging application Monday from the town of Bafut, where he was praising troops on behalf of Cameroon's president, Paul Biya.
A good number of Amazonians were neutralized. And you have 50 guns, pistols, ammunition, motorcycles, and even a Fortuna car, 2 horses, and so on.
Carr said troops on Thursday and Friday killed 15 rebels in Bafut, including an infamous fighter calling himself General Alaji, who in 2018 kidnapped dozens of school children. He said Cameroonian troops killed 7 other rebels during raids on camps in several villages and the town of Bamenda with no civilian casualties. But villagers disputed that claim and said at least 13 civilians were killed in the clashes. 32-year-old Umaru Tanda said 7 civilians were found dead after the military left his village of Bangolan. Speaking through a messaging app from the village, he said 3 of those killed were fellow Muslims with whom he was praying on Friday when the military opened fire.
The military men that are Muslim went to the mosque to pray.
the Amber boy break in. So instead of the military to shoot the Amber, the instant and the shooting by the civilians. Now in the village, we don't know who we are counting on because we were counting on the military, but now the military are even shooting by us.
Tanda said his village had welcomed the military in hopes that they would prevent rebel attacks and abductions. In the northwest town of Tatum, farmer Innocent Ngumula said crossfire during raids in three neighboring villages killed six people, including teenagers. He told VOA that villagers had expected the army to protect them from the rebels.
It's rather unfortunate. I've been hoping that the military will come in and solve their problem so that this killing left and right will come to an end. They regret that they are now like orphans. They're tired. They want peace and that the rule of law should reign.
The separatists on social media blamed Cameroon's military for the civilian casualties, acknowledged their own losses in the raids, and claimed responsibility for an unclear number of military deaths. Cameroon's military denied suffering any losses and said only a few of its troops were wounded. Cameroon's Anglophone rebels have since 2017 been fighting to carve out an English-speaking state from Cameroon's French-speaking majority. The rebels and Cameroon's military routinely accuse each other of atrocities against civilians, which rights groups have documented on both sides. The United Nations says the fighting in the English-speaking regions has cost more than 3,000 lives and displaced more than 500,000 people. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Two COVID-19 patients in South Sudan that recovered from the disease were released today from isolation centers. A South Sudan health ministry official says one patient was released from a Juba center, while the other was released from a Torrit facility. After the number of confirmed cases jumped from 6 to 49 last week, First Vice President Riek Machar said the COVID-19 task force was dividing Juba into five zones, and testing for COVID-19 would be increased. He said that way, health officials would know where the confirmed cases were located in the city. Makur Matur Koriam, the undersecretary in South Sudan's health ministry, says another 60 ventilators are on their way to South Sudan. The country's health minister said there were only 4 ventilators in the country about a week ago. UNHCR says internally displaced persons, or IDPs, and refugees in South Sudan, many of whom live in crowded camps, are especially vulnerable to contracting COVID-19. UNHCR's communications officer in South Sudan says ongoing intercommunal clashes, combined with the coronavirus restrictions on movement and goods, have created major challenges for humanitarian groups that provide much-needed aid to affected populations. UNHCR says recent fighting in certain parts of the country has left many people struggling to survive. And finally, some South Sudanese said last Friday on Labor Day that they had little to celebrate because they are not making any money since government restrictions were put in place to stop the spread of coronavirus. They say the moves have devastated the economy. In mid-March, South Sudan shut down all non-essential businesses to control the spread of the virus. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Gaga Mururo by Mede Muzika.
Kate Murufu, wow.
Kata Mururu, abawo, tofeti te. Niri wa Mururu, mama, abawo, tofeti te. Agwanzi Mururu, mama, abawo, tofeti te.
We've been listening to Mede Muzika with the song Gaga Mururu. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.